Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, or do we have a new ditty?
I don't know. I just like made it up on the spot. I freestyled, so we can use it. I mean, for whatever, but
okay.
Yeah, let's... I mean, so
how you doing? I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't have anything exciting. last week was all the exciting stuff.
Well, we closed on our house in South Carolina, so that's exciting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Celebration.
Yeah, it's been a wild couple of days because we had a really hard day yesterday with a doctor's appointment. Not really ready to like go into detail, but my twins are going to need surgery. So that's tough. But then the following day we got closed on our house so we can move forward with, you know, just our new house and getting prepared for that. And I'm really excited about that. So I'm trying to focus on that.
Yeah. Lots of changes.
Lots of changes. But I guess we'll just jump into it.
Okay.
What do you say about that?
Yeah, come on with it.
So today's case is a little different. Actually, it's different from anything we've ever done.
Oh, cool.
I had a great time with the whole Murdoch saga.
Yeah.
Not a great time, but watching the trial and doing live updates, you know, we would watch the trial, we would do live updates during the day, and then sometimes we would do trial recaps.
Yeah.
And communicating with our listeners about it.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a lot of fun. It feels like so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
So today I thought I'd tell you about a case that hasn't yet gone to trial. I'll tell you a little bit about what we know about the crime, and we can take this journey together.
Okay.
So that we can watch the trial together.
Yeah, and do live updates again.
Yeah, I thought it would be fun.
Cool.
As I alluded to last week, this case has gotten a large amount of media attention. You probably have heard of it. And because this trial and trial testimony have not yet taken place, just a little disclaimer here, everything reported here is from like a pretrial hearings, pretrial discovery and stuff like that, and interviews with the families of the victim and the alleged murderer. Nothing has been proven. This is all just pretrial information that has come to light. So this is the case about the wife who is accused of killing her husband and then writing a children's book about the little boy grieving over the loss of his dad.
Wow. Yeah, I have heard of this one.
This is the story of the death of Eric Richens. You've probably heard his wife's name, Corey, but his name is Eric Richens.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I've seen her face all over.
Right.
I haven't really listened to all the details, so please tell me.
So Eric Richens and his wife, Corey, lived in a rural small town in Utah. By all accounts, they were the all-American family. You've got this attractive husband, attractive wife, three thriving little boys. Their photos are those that you'd expect to see in a perfect family's Instagram feed or on Facebook, you know. Vacations abroad, lots of family-oriented activities at the park, at the zoo, at the beach, Instagrammable holiday photos, etc. Eric and Corey met when he was working as a contractor and Corey was working at Home Depot as a cashier. So he was in there all the time and he fancied Corey.
Okay.
So he saw her all the time and he was like, oh, like you. He wasn't the type to chase down a girl, so he had his friend ask for her phone number, which I thought is cute.
That
I mean,
is cute.
It takes courage to do that because you're just as nervous,
yeah,
you know, to send your friend. But They ended up falling in love and getting married in 2013. They had three boys over the years. Eric and Corey's families meshed well together. I mean, they spent holidays and birthdays together, and they got along like most families that come together through marriage do, you know? You've got the mutual grandchild birthday party and, you know, all the activities. Yeah, so right. They saw a lot of each other and they just really meshed well. Now, Eric and Corey weren't just a beautiful couple with three boys. They seemed to have that and everything else. Mm. Corey began a house flipping business. She'd buy homes, fix them up, and resell them for a substantial profit. Her mom said that any one time, she'd be working on three houses at once.
Wow.
Yeah. And she was pretty much a one-woman show. I mean, she did have partners and people that she worked with, but it was really her business that she started. So she was busy. Eric began a stonemasonry business. So the couple were doing pretty well financially. They're the couple that, you know, when you have a birthday or Christmas or you need to buy them a gift, you're like, what do you buy the person who has everything?
Has everything,
you know,
right.
Like they made good money. They bought what they wanted. Mm-hmm. They wanted for nothing. So they had a beautiful home. They traveled. They really had it all. So it seemed.
Yeah.
But that would all come to an end on March 4th, 2022. Corey called her mother and said Eric was unresponsive. The day before, Eric's family said he had been complaining of chest pains, so maybe it was something to do with that, she thought.
Hmm.
Corey's mom and brothers rushed to her side and noted that Corey was a mess, just bawling, curled up in a ball, and just a wreck. Now, Corey told police that she had made Eric a Moscow mule. They were celebrating something really important. And then she went to lay with her son for a little bit. And when she was done laying with her son, she went back to bed, the bed that she shared with Eric. And that was around 3 a.m.
Hmm.
She found Eric cold. So she called 911.
Hmm.
Now, Eric was 39 and he was cold because he was dead. Dead.
Yeah.
At the scene, the paramedics believed that Eric died of an aneurysm because there was no immediate sign of death, no visible wound. And Corey couldn't provide them with any more information than she had already given them.
Huh.
But about a month later, the toxicology was in, and the police ruled the death an accidental fentanyl overdose.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Now, this is happening all over the country, guys.
Yes.
Just be careful what you acquire and what you ingest. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. What you pick up off the ground.
I mean, it's happening. Like, it's happening to all sorts of people.
Right.
So this is a sad story. You've got a father, a husband and a father of three ingest something laced with fentanyl. That's tragic. I mean.
Yeah. That's.
According to Corey and her family, Eric was a recreational drug user. They explained that he would take THC gummies here and there, mostly at night to kind of unwind from his day. But they did say he didn't always buy them from a store or like a reputable source online. Sometimes he would get them off the streets from people he didn't even know.
Oh, no.
So it's not far-fetched to think that something like this could happen.
Right.
Accidentally. A year after Eric's death, Corey wrote a children's book to help her boys cope with the loss of their father. They'd really been struggling. They were so young and having a difficult time understanding that they would never see their father again.
Right.
I can't even imagine having to explain that to a child.
No.
I mean,
no way.
And then remind them every day, no, daddy's not home.
Right.
He's in heaven. Or, you know, whatever you want to tell your child. But like, kids carry on about stuff and like to have to remind them every day. Ugh. She went on a local talk show, Good Things Utah, to promote her book, Are You With Me? It was about a little boy who lost his dad, and every subsequent significant time in that little boy's life, his father was always there.
Hmm.
The book illustrates the dad as an angel, always present up in the clouds, like at a sports game or a birthday. Now, according to Corey's family, it really did help the Richens boys to cope with the loss of their dad. And writing the book was very therapeutic for Corey. I mean, she is now navigating life without her husband, right?
Right.
But just a few weeks after Corey appeared on the talk show on May 8th, 2023, Corey was arrested on suspicion that she murdered her husband.
Wow.
Her family, and really the country, was flabbergasted. Do you remember the headline? I mean, I remember hearing the snippet.
Right.
Mother accused of killing husband who writes a children's book. It's, it's like, what?
Yeah.
It's the stuff of Lifetime movies.
It is.
Like, it's, you're like, what? So what happened after the, you know, she appeared on that talk show that suddenly the police are suspicious of her? Like, what happened that they were like, oh, it's an accidental overdose. Wait a minute, it's murder.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they were really suspicious from the start. She did say that she made him something right before he died. And there were issues in Eric and Corey's marriage.
Mm.
Eric went on frequent hunting trips that amounted to months out of the year. And Corey wished he'd be home with the family more. That was one point of contention. Additionally, for years, Eric had wanted Corey to be a stay-at-home mom and not work.
Hmm.
But she was very ambitious and independent, and she was not going to not work. I mean, she had built a career that she was proud of, and there was no signs of her slowing down at any time. Lastly, Corey's mother alleged that Eric had an affair, and that left tension in the marriage over the years.
No.
I don't know if that's true, but, you know, we'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Eric and Corey went to counseling to try and, you know, work through some things that had been going on. They wanted to stay together for their kids. They didn't want to break the family apart, especially Eric. He didn't want to have to turn their lives upside down.
Yeah.
Life was really good. Aww. And to divorce meant separating assets.
Oh, yeah. That's...
I mean, that's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The house, the cars, the money, the children. I mean, it's a whole thing. So sometimes people are like,
it's not worth it.
I'll just be unhappy, you know?
Oh, no.
Whatever.
Yeah.
However, very shortly before his death, he secretly put his estate into a trust for his three boys and made his sister Katie executor.
Wow.
In case something happened to him.
Oh, no.
He wanted to make sure that his children were taken care of. But he didn't trust Corey to do so.
Girl.
Now, at the time of Eric's death, there were 6 life insurance policies.
Six?
Amounting to about $3 million.
Who has 6 life insurance policies?
Eric.
Wow, that is a lot.
Now, weeks before his death, Corey forged his signature on 1 life insurance policy for an additional $100,000. Mm. I don't know if this was a 7th life insurance policy or if it was 1 of the 6.
Mm-hmm.
But does it matter? I mean, 6 is 7 is 20. You know what I mean?
Right.
When it comes to life insurance policies. Investigators allege that Corey had been in financial crisis for a while leading up to Eric's death. They say they have evidence that Corey had been stealing and misappropriating funds from Eric's business for years.
Girl.
And that this house flipping business of hers was drowning in debt.
Oh, no.
Wasn't profitable. Her family and her attorney say, well, that's how it works. Okay. You take on debt to fix up a dilapidated home. Sometimes it takes thousands. Sometimes it takes hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then you pay back what you owe once the house sells. And then the rest you pocket.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
That is how it works often. But police say that's not exactly what was going on there.
Hmm.
The debt load never seemed to get paid off when it was supposed to. And it just seemed to roll over from job to job. Before Eric's death, she made an offer on a 10-acre estate with a mansion and a guest house on it.
She was bold.
Yeah. It's a prime location in Heber Valley near Park City Resort ski resorts. The mansion on the property was 20,000 square feet.
Ooh.
And the guest house was bigger than most people's house at 4,000 square feet.
Okay.
So the homes were first constructed in 2017, but they were never completed and they just sat abandoned for like 2 years.
Oh.
And Corey's dream was to break into this luxury market. So when she discovered this property and that it just had been sitting there for years, she was like, this is it. This is how I break into the market. This was going to be her first big deal. Now, she financed the transaction by borrowing from some investors and made an offer for $3.9 million. And her intention was to make the property like a resort in the area. And she stood to make about $12 million profit from it.
Goodness.
Considering everything. Pretty soon after his death, Eric's family alleged that Corey could have been responsible for his death because Eric said as much when he was alive.
Right. He gave his suspicions.
He said,
wow.
Like a lot of people say when they turn up dead, if something happens to me, she did it. How many times do we hear that in cases when someone dies and they had told their family just that? So they also told police that they think Corey tried to poison him before. Not once, but twice.
What in the world?
In 2019, they went on a trip to Greece and Corey gave him a drink that made him, quote unquote, violently ill.
Oh, wow.
But Corey's family says that Eric was taking medication that he shouldn't be drinking with and it got him sick. Oh. Corey's brother said, in fact, Corey didn't make his drink. Eric ordered a virgin drink from the restaurant they were at and the waitress brought him an alcoholic drink instead, and he drank that.
Right.
Lena.
It's a likely story.
If you ordered a virgin drink and someone brought you an alcoholic drink, you would know.
You would know.
You would know, and you wouldn't drink it if you didn't need to, okay? That's all I'm going to say about that. The other time Eric's family alleged was a few days before Valentine's Day, the year he died. When Corey made him a sandwich and he suddenly broke into hives and couldn't breathe.
What in the world?
Her family says, oh, she bought that sandwich and it was bad or something.
Her family had a lot of answers, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, they were interviewed for 48 hours.
Okay.
And actually they were the only family that was interviewed for 48 hours. So it was very one-sided, but it didn't convince me.
Right.
Like,
so they're giving stories from what they've heard.
Sure.
Answers from her. Okay.
Also, after Eric died, Corey wanted to access a safe that was in their home, and she believed it had important documents in it worth some money to her. But remember about that secret trust he put in his sister's name.
Right.
When him and Corey were having marital problems, she was not entitled to any of that.
Wow.
Not sure of the occasion, but Eric's sister Amy was at the home and Corey's older brother was at the home at the time. And Corey and Amy got into a physical altercation.
Uh-oh.
Her brother said that they were both kind of swinging at each other, but Amy said she got punched in the face and she went so far as to call the police and charge Corey with assault.
Okay.
Corey pled no contest. I didn't have any information about like if she served time. I don't think she did. But you just have two sides of the coin. Heads is Eric's family and their accusations towards Corey, believing she's responsible for his death. Tails, Corey and her family and their narrative of providing innocent explanations for all these strange happenings over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the truth? A pretrial hearing was held to weigh whether or not Corey should be released on bail during the pretrial phase, or if she should remain in jail until she's tried. And this hearing is much like a trial in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
The prosecution brings forth witnesses. One witness who testified said that he evaluated the Google searches from Corey's phone, which included things like Can deleted texts be retrieved from an iPhone?
Come on.
Yes, yes, it can. And what is a lethal dose of fentanyl?
Shut your mouth.
Corey's attorney says, well, those searches were done after Eric's death, so she was just wondering.
Right.
Another witness was the lead investigator on the case, Detective Jeff O'Driscoll. He said that he interviewed a woman named Carmen Lauber, who worked for Corey Richens. Now, Corey had employed her to clean the houses that she flipped, as well as her own home sometimes. Carmen told Detective O'Driscoll that Corey asked her to get fentanyl pills for an investor that had a back injury.
Oh, right. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't he just go to the doctor and get medicine for himself?
Mm-hmm. Well, and fentanyl, like straight fentanyl
for
back injury?
No, no, ma'am.
No. She said she gave Corey 15 to 30 pills. Hard to be sure of how many. And Corey paid her cash for them. This transaction was done a few days before Valentine's Day when Eric got sick from the sandwich.
Oh, no.
Now, about a week later, Carmen was contacted again and asked if she could get stronger fentanyl this time because that last batch just didn't do the trick.
Yeah, didn't work so well.
No. Carmen did, and she delivered them to Corey. And in exchange, Corey wrote her a check for $1,300 from her business account.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Corey's camp vehemently dispute this claim. At the pretrial hearing, her attorney asked Detective O'Driscoll on cross, isn't it possible that she was paying her from her business account for cleaning services rendered? Like, she did work for her, so doesn't it make sense? And he's like, I can't say one or the other. I don't want to speculate. He was just testifying to the conversation he had with Carmen.
Right.
Now, sidebar, her attorney is a woman named Sky Lazaro. And I'm interested to see what the jury is going to think of her.
Okay.
She doesn't come off as likable.
Oh, no.
Think Dick Harpootlian
in
a skirt. No, she's not as bold as Dick Harpootlian. She's more of a Karen type.
Oh, no.
She's a little snarky in the way that a defense attorney
is supposed should to be. Right.
Yeah. But in the way that a jury might not find endearing at all.
Right.
Did I put that nicely? Was that nice?
I think so.
Okay. I'm trying. Carmen was actually, back to Carmen. Carmen was actually a convicted criminal and was on probation for drug-related offenses when she was interviewed. So Corey knew what she was doing by asking her.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, here's this. If Carmen was lying, why?
Yeah.
Why would a convicted criminal who's currently on probation admit to committing even more drug-related crimes?
I mean, hey, they could say, hey, if you give us information on Corey, we'll take off some time.
Now, that's what Corey's attorney suggests.
Okay.
That she was facing, you know, other crimes, like she was facing being charged with other crimes. But what other crimes? She's the one who said, I gave her the pills. Like, she's the one who said, Corey didn't tell the police she got pills from her. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
She brought forth this information that could get her even in more trouble.
Okay, right.
Nobody else said this.
Yeah.
So that argument is poo-pooed.
Yeah. Kind of a wash.
Yeah, exactly. So at this time, Carmen has not been charged in connection with Eric's death.
Okay.
I don't know if she ever will.
Since she's aiding in the process?
Yeah, I don't know. But we'll see. We'll see how that shakes out. The judge ruled that Corey would remain in jail until her trial because of the nature of the crime.
Good.
And I suspect that the victim impact statement read by Eric's sister Amy really sealed the deal. It's clear that Eric's family thinks she did it.
Wow.
And that's it. Like, they think she's responsible. They don't want her out. They don't want her anywhere near them. In September of last year, 2023, Corey had a seizure in custody after taking some medication that she was prescribed.
Oh, Lord.
She was rushed to the hospital. She ended up being okay, but Corey claims that she was given the wrong medication. Could have been an awful mistake. Or
wrong drink, wrong medication.
Because of the nature of her crime she's being accused of. It could be a diversion tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Not long after the medication snafu incident, jail personnel found a letter in Corey's cell that was intended for her mother that laid out a few ways they could help in her defense.
Okay.
The verbiage was written in a very suggestive way, explaining that her brother would need to testify that Eric bought drugs in Mexico to back up the story that Eric was always acquiring drugs here and there. And thus, the fentanyl overdose was self-induced.
Mm-hmm.
In November 2023, prosecutors filed a motion for no contact between Carrie and her mother. They said this letter is proof of witness tampering, and they can't have her writing these letters, you know, suggesting that they say things in trial.
Right.
That's... So, some of the
don't
language...
Don't they know that your letters stuff's are going to be read?
No. Some of the language in the letter seems like she's just talking about her defense in plain terms, like relaying information she talked about with her attorney. You know, Sky says this, that, and the other.
Uh-huh.
And there are some things that sound very suggestive. At the very top of the page, she wrote, "Walk the dog," in large letters with two exclamation marks.
Okay.
But next to it, it says, quote, "But take vague notes so you remember," end quote.
Right. Okay.
Now, the judge denied the no contact order because he said the state didn't prove that this was witness tampering. I think one of the reasons is the letter was never sent.
Okay.
So her mother never received it.
Okay.
Now, when interviewed for 48 hours, and of course this letter has come out.
Is there not a, like an intent to?
It seems like there should be.
Oh, yeah.
But when interviewed for 48 hours, Corey's mother said that the stuff Corey talked about in the letter was true. Like Eric did buy drugs from Mexico. And Ronnie, her brother, who she was saying, Ronnie needs to testify to this. Ronnie knew about it and suggested that they were just talking about things that were important to testify about. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Totally can buy that.
True.
And clearly the judge thought the contents were ambiguous enough that he could not determine that it was in fact witness tampering.
Hmm.
And again, she wrote the letter, but she never sent it.
Right.
And interestingly enough, Corey said the letter was a story of fiction. She said it was a new book she was working on.
Walk the Dog.
Called Walk the Dog by Corey Richens.
Uh-huh.
Feels like she could have said nothing and said to her family, like exactly what her family said, which was, I'm just talking about things that I hope that they say in trial to aid in my defense.
But she had to lie about it.
But instead, she said it was a work of fiction. I find that a little suspicious.
A lot.
I find that weird.
Yeah. Agreed.
Say less, please. The three Richens children are living with Eric's family, and Corey's family is not allowed visitation with them, which is sad.
Yeah.
Corey's mother attends the boys' sports practices and games and sees them that way. And that's how she gets away with it because it's in a public place and they can't tell her not to be there. So she keeps up with them that way.
No.
The boys get to talk to their mom a couple times a week via video call, but nothing more than that. Now, Corey is expected to go to trial in 2025. Not soon enough, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But that's not all. There are civil lawsuits going on over Eric's estate.
Oh.
I don't know the dollar amount of what's being fought over. The custody of the children sort of determines which family gets the money, though.
Okay.
Corey's family or Eric's family. Because the last we know is that Eric's wish was that none of it go to Corey.
Right.
Just his boys. That's what he put in writing before his death. And that's really huge. Yeah. I mean, a husband doesn't change their will suddenly.
Wow.
To cut their wife out unless something serious has led them to do so.
I feel like that tells a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something when you have an argument and you're like, that's it.
I'm changing
my will. I mean, a distrust and something has to really be wrong with your partner for you to say, if something happens to me, I do not trust her to take care of my children with that money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. 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 That's substantial.
For sure.
Now, as I wrap up, I just want to reiterate that Corey is presumed innocent until she has her day in court.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to leave you with one more little piece of information that was just brought to light, today.
Oh, okay.
Or yesterday. Corey's mother, Lisa Darden, lost a partner to a drug overdose in 2006.
Oh, really?
Yep.
So this is a generational thing? Mm.
Unlucky, huh?
For sure.
The case was ruled as such. No foul play was suspected, and Lisa collected the life insurance policy on him.
Interesting.
I don't know what to say about this.
Yikes.
What I will say is that you better believe the police are looking into that now.
Oh, yeah.
Could be that drug overdoses are not unique and that Lisa and her daughter both just so happened to lose a partner to a drug overdose. And that's really sad. Or it could be that it worked the first time and Corey knew just what to do to get out of the financial mess she was in.
Right. That's very interesting.
Who knows? Now, as we grow closer to trial, we'll learn more details about even more things that are disclosed at trial. And I think I'll maybe do a two-part, like a part two closer to trial.
Mm.
That way we can all get geared up and ready to watch the trial together.
Yeah, let's do it.
But as of now, that's all I have for you. I tried to make it a little bit short and sweet because there are other things, but this is the gist.
Okay.
This is the gist.
Well, I appreciate you for bringing us all up to date and up to speed.
You know, I talk to you about this quite often. Like, I really want to do current stories. Like,
yeah,
I love talking about current events and just
diving in, and
I just really like talking about it as it's going on. Like, I just really like it.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it.
No, I
so
like it.
Here's it's a current event. And I just think it'll be fun for us to like go through this together and watch the trial together next year.
Okay.
Next year. Oh, yeah. We have to wait for Stranger Things. And her trial in 2025.
Yeah. Why do these shows take so long? It's not fair.
But hey, it's already, March is almost already over.
I know.
So we're getting there.
Yeah.
It'll be here before you know it.
You ain't lying. That's funny because I think it was yesterday, Grayson was asking for something. He wanted a sweatshirt. And I said, Christmas is coming up.
It's right around the corner, yeah, buddy.
He looks at me and he's like, no, it's still like 9 months away.
I'm going to use that. Hazel always asks, can we get new toys? And I'm like, what? What? I mean, to be fair, I do buy them new toys all the time, but they're like thrift store toys.
Yeah.
So, but they don't know that. No. They just get new toys all the time. Yeah. I need to stop that. I need to cut that out. But anyway, so yeah, that's all I got for you.
Well, thanks.
I will keep my finger on the pulse of the Richens case, and I'll be taking notes as they unfold, and hopefully I'll put a part two together at the end of this year when we know more about trial date and stuff like that. So
cool. I like it. Thank you.
Yes. So I hope you guys enjoyed that.
I did. Well, that was great.
Yeah.
Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah. Let's do it again.
Okay.
We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bark, bark.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and rating. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or send case suggestions to cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.